Let me start just, I guess, with the initial observation that you guys just don't stand still. You know, Century Square seems to be, you know, moving right along. Park West is about ready to open up. You know, you all have some other things going on, but you just can't stay still. With that as an introduction, explain a little bit about a couple of new things that you all are considering.
You bet. And howdy, Bill. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. Always a value, your platform and what you bring to the community. But, absolutely being a part of, Chancellor Sharp's team and the Texas A&M University system, we're in truly historic times, and a lot of projects, have been completed. A lot of them underway, a lot of them in planning. One thing we all know about Chancellor Sharp, you can agree with him or not, on various things, but, he certainly has a bold vision for the Texas A&M University system. And so it's just a privilege to be a part of, a small part of the team that kind of puts the wheels on his vision. The latest one that we've had is this new senior living, children's daycare learning center initiative, that we announced, just a couple of weeks ago.
And is this something that's going to be a combination in one location?
You know, we've got two locations that that we've identified and offered to potential development partners to consider. We've got the approximately 57 acres. It's located east of Veterans Park, you know, the former TI site. We acquired that back in 1990, I believe it was. That site has some tremendous potential. So that's one of the sites that we've offered up. The other site we've offered up is 10 to 20 acres. We've got quite a bit of land there, but it's across Neil Luby's restaurant, now Cafe Excel, right there at Texas Avenue where Rosemary, you know, kind of tees into Texas Avenue. So when you go west right there, that's, you know, the far end of Hensel Park, you know, that runs over to, South College, but, there's 10 to 20 acres in there that we could carve out, possibly more if we needed to, but we think those two locations are probably the most viable for these type of initiatives. When we talk about intergenerational, that's really the key, and that's what is so unique about this particular initiative is it'll be the Children's Daycare and Learning Center. It will be independent living. Now, I hate to say age restricted or age limited because now I think I'm over that age, but, you know, likely to be 50 years, you know, old and above in independent living. Then, you know, then there'll be some transition, probably a subsequent phase two, into assisted living and then, likely a subsequently a phase three managed care, which will, provide services regarding memory care, dementia, mental health, some of those type of things. But in the pre-proposal conference that we hosted on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, we've offered up those two tracks. And a proposer, they're the experts. We look to them as marketing professionals and rely on their expertise to tell us how lay out a plan, lay out a path for us to evaluate, assess, and we can look at and determine if that's in the best interest of the A&M system, you know, in all of our entities. So they may take a piece of both. They may take a portion of track one and, you know, pass on track two, may take all of track two, pass on track one. You know, there may even be a partner out there, which would be wonderful, on the track one, the 57 acres located just west of Veterans Park. You know, we've got that large 160,000 square foot metal building out there, the OTI building, and we've got a lot of storage in there. We've got taxidermy. We've got herbitarium, I think is the word for it, and we've got some research going on out there, and you know, our NASA simulator is stored out there. But we would consider a proposal that would actually demo that particular building. As long as it would provide for a replacement building, similar size, similar design, that we would locate out at the Rellis campus, so we could relocate those folks, relocate those specimens and things that we have stored there, and then, you know, completely develop that that 57 acre site. But we've opened that up to the vendor community and to the developer that were in attendance, and we'll see what they come up with. We had a strong turnout in our pre-proposal conference, and just exceptional interest to this point. And we're optimistic that we are going to secure the appropriate partners.
What, if any, discussion has there been about who's going to be eligible to take advantage of both of these functions?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. Obviously, there's lots of decisions left to be made, and we're early in the process, you know, of recruiting and securing, you know, our P3 partner and developer on this. But when it comes to the residential component, the independent living, the assisted living, the managed care, that will be open to the public. It is our predominant thinking at this point. When you get to the children's daycare and learning center, again, lots of decisions left to be made. It's not final, but the thought now is, based on just anecdotally what's going on at the Becky Gates Center over on the A&M campus, we'll likely have a priority enrollment for Texas A&M University employees and likely system employees.
What about the children of current students? Where would they fit in this, or would there possibly
be to look at that. I think that's a great point. We'll probably look at that. I would assume, again, we'll work with our development partner, but I would assume they would be included in the A&M employee category. I know when I was in my undergraduate, my wife and I, we had a child, and we our child was raised on an on-campus daycare. Nothing to the magnitude of this, but it was certainly an enhancement and amenity that meant a lot to us, particularly as I was trying to work my way through school. So, likely, if I have a say in it, and I suspect the chancellor will have a vote in it, I would think children of students would likely have priority enrollment in our daycare center as well. And then based on that demand, that enrollment level, then it will likely be opened up to the public. Now, again, a lot of this, our developer is going to have a lot of say and recommendation that we're going to place value on to make those type of decisions. But right now, that's the way it appears to be forming. Now, I will tell you, people might ask, well, why are you going in that direction? Why are you trying to limit that? Again, similar to Century Square that we discussed, and now this intergenerational facility and that's now being contemplated. One of the critical needs we have as a system and a university is recruitment and retention of faculty and staff. And you know, when we land some of these younger professionals or mid-level professionals, or for that matter, you know, later in their career, these distinguished researchers and professors that join us and their families or spouse, they come in, you know, there's a real draw to having a mixed-use, kind of a denser urban feel development like Century Square, and we think this particular development may have a similar feel. So we think it's going to help us on recruitment and retention of faculty and staff, and also we believe it's going to be an enrichment to just the quality of life for those employees and future employees of the university. Another thing that I forgot to mention earlier was, think about this. This was one of Dr. Byington's ideas, and I just thought it was just eye-opening to me. But within the daycare center, children's daycare center, she could have a dedicated wing or some isolated rooms where sick children could be housed. In other words, we've all had that, or most of us have had that experience, where the daycare calls, and you know your child, 3 or 4 year old child, is sick, and they're needing to send them home, and you or your spouse have to take off work and get them home, and I didn't know what to do but give them chicken noodle soup about half the time, and try to get some Gatorade in them. But you know, depending on what the issue was, but in this particular application, what Dr. Byington's saying is, she's very interested in perhaps having some rooms where those type of children, if they get sick during the day at daycare. They could be placed in those rooms, be observed around the clock, you know, throughout the day by HSC nurses, medical doctors, medical students in training. We could send email updates to the parents every 15 minutes or 30 minutes or, you know, whatever is appropriate. They could dispense, the HSC personnel could dispense medicines as approved by the parents. These are the type of possibilities that are out there that I just am not aware that those exist. And I think we're in a unique position having the Health Science Center and having the educational professionals that we have and just the resources that a Texas A&M University system has to invest into a facility such as this just makes it remarkable. And the other thing that I'd like to mention too is A&M University has gotten pretty excited about this, and you know they're offering free bus travel, bus transit service to the facility and facilities to campus. Offered up, likely will have you know group tickets and seating arrangements for these residents to attend Aggie athletic events and you know theater events and music events and those type of things, and may even have a dedicated area within MSC that they can go and socialize and you know with each other, perhaps interact with you know our current students over there and vice versa, and adjunct professor opportunities to maybe for some of these retired folks to speak in some of the classes or you know to maybe contribute to the daycare and learning center, you know, reading to the classes or helping educate, and maybe some of them have some, you know, have math teaching abilities or who knows what, artistic abilities, and teach them to paint or play musical instruments. I mean, there's just a lot of synergy among the various groups. And, you know, as you said, you've kind of lost count of them, but all the ones that have the opportunity to contribute and, you know, volunteer their time and just move the bar higher. And that's what, being an Aggie is all about, and so that's why I have every confidence that this will be successful once we choose that right partner and put the strategy together and implement it. I think it's going to be unlimited in what we can achieve.
The proposal that is out there is going to have one location for both functions for those children as well as those who are older.
You know, the proposal that we have, and maybe I would better summarize like this. We have identified, you know, the two separate tracks. So there's got a 57-acre track, and then we've got a 10 to 20-acre, you know, up to 10 to 20-acre track, you know, at an alternate location. The chancellor's fine, and I believe the committee, the evaluation team is going to be fine with, you know, if someone comes in, a P3, a developer comes in and says, hey, I need 40 acres, you know, out there east of Veterans Park, and we're going to do it all right there. Or maybe we need all 57 acres. We're going to do everything, all the different components and aspects right there. Or it could be, hey, we may do the independent living on the 10 to 15 acres, up to 20 that we're looking at west of Cafe Excel, but we want to do kind of the intergenerational children's daycare assisted living, rehabilitation, physical therapy, some of the different things that we're contemplating from the health services perspective. You know, we could do that at the larger Veterans Park site. So a lot of decisions to be made like that. You know, and I know that you're aware, you've been around long enough to know. I mean, Chancellor Sharp, he has some, as we spoke earlier, he has some bold visions. And this vision, we've been assessing it and contemplating it for several years now and looking at it. And, you know, his vision, it involves a very comprehensive approach to our, you know, A&M students, our faculty, staff, but the different aspects that he's looking at. And we feel like not only will the students and faculty and staff benefit, but if we're able to pull this off, and I have every confidence that we will, we feel like the Bryan College Station community, as well as the Brazos Valley region, just the positive impact that it will have to advance elderly care and research and geriatric studies and intergenerational learning and educational techniques, not only through the Brazos Valley region, but across Texas and likely globally. So it's a big vision. There's a lot of moving parts to it. We feel like we're very much on the cutting edge. And when I'll just tell you, when Dr. Byington, she's our vice chancellor, new vice chancellor for health services, she joined us in early 2017, has just brought a lot of new energy and momentum for this proposed initiative. And when you combine that with Dr. Banks, you know, our vice chancellor and dean of engineering, who has just lots of ideas and enthusiasm, and in addition to the incorporation of her InMed health program, which will undoubtedly transform the delivery of healthcare services in the future, into this intergenerational kind of vision project that the chancellor has tasked us to pursue, it's just a game changer. And, I think when you have a comprehensive facility, regardless of the location, whichever, plat of land or both or pieces of both that are ultimately selected, you know, when you have a children's daycare and learning center and then you have independent living and then potentially assisted living and managed care, and then you have a place where, it'll be staffed with HSC physicians and HSC nurses, HSC healthcare professionals. We'll have our medical students, nursing students there. And as I'm sure you're aware, a critical component of a nursing program is providing students with an opportunity to directly apply the knowledge and skills that they gain in the classroom into a real-life clinical environment. That's exactly what this will do. We also have pharmacy. We have student teacher, out of college education. We have student teacher, intern opportunities, student worker opportunities. I mean, that's truly service learning and training. So, student observers and teachers and, the vet med students, you bring out their traveling kind of their pet program for, some of the assisted living folks or from some of the children in the daycare and learning center. I just think it's just a very unique vision and just unlimited potential within the realm of healthcare, living well, just healthy future. I think there's a lot of potential there,
and especially focusing on the two demographics, those who are young and those who are not young.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because we have looked at that quite a bit, and I've done some due diligence and some feasibility, from some independent third party brokers, and which gives me confidence that we're on the right track. And one of the things that really caught my eye, and I don't know if it will have the same effect on you or not, but it did on me, we looked at kind of the demographics of the country, and we looked and don't quote me on these numbers, but it was, it was like, 41 million was currently, or 65 and above, and 70 something million or are considered, children or youth, which is about a one-third, two-third ratio. But then we looked in the year 2030, and it's almost 50-50. I mean, we are a rapidly aging population, and I think to stay out and get out on the leading edge of that, clinical training and healthcare and innovative ways to inspire and motivate and enrich lives of young, but also the elderly. I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. I think it best prepares our students, and the opportunity to benefit and optimize the intellectual power and knowledge of our professors and researchers over on the campus and within our state agencies, I just think is a tremendous opportunity. One of the things I would like to say, and I know there's been a couple of news stories on this, and unfortunately it was omitted, but I think another big part of this particular initiative is the impact that the TEAMS and TAMU, the Center for Remote Health Technologies and System, it's a new center we have under Dean Banks, but it'll be an integral partner in designing and developing, utilizing, deploying new prototype medical devices and equipment. And what a tremendous business development opportunity, as well as health profession, medical student training opportunity to have real life testing and training and, you know, results of some of these new devices and prototypes. It won't be available anywhere else in the world, and we'll have it right here in Bryan College Station. So, you know, to me, just a limitless opportunity and a pursuit well worth exploring.
I've lost track of the number of colleges and divisions and departments and offices that can really benefit by this project.
Let me tell you, I try not to overstate. I mean, I leave that up to others. But to me, you know, you can talk about the healthcare professionals that we have on campus. I mean, we can talk about the pharmacists, the rehabilitation and therapy services and therapists that we have. And, you know, you get the College of Education professors and students involved in the early childhood curriculum, you know, of our daycare center and learning center. I mean, it's all across the spectrum. And, you know, to me, the engineering folks, oftentimes they're overlooked when we're talking about medical. Clearly, the HSC is the quarterback of something like this. But you know, engineering is going to be an all-star player on this team as well. And to bring their technology and blur that line between engineering and medical and how we deliver those medical services in the future, I think it's just very transformative. And I think it's, you know, very cutting edge, as I spoke before. And we don't know what we don't know. I just know there's a tremendous need out there, and that we're learning every day about this. And the more that I visit with people and talk to people and visit with much, much smarter people than I, it opens your eyes to just the unlimited potential of such a collaborative development between all the different players.
I'm sure you're among those who are wondering, why didn't anybody think about this before? And now you're glad that nobody else has.
Well, you know, I think, for my grandparents' sake and now my parents' sake and some of those, there's a big part of me that, wish we weren't maybe first in line on some of this stuff. But you know, as Aggies do, we like to lead. And so the time's right. I think the stars have aligned. I think when you have someone of Chancellor Sharp's, you know, vision and just his, commitment to not only Texas A&M, but to the great state of Texas. And then, you know, you sprinkle in leadership of, you know, our Kathy Banks and a Carrie Byington and all of those that are likely contributors to something like this. It's just exciting. And, when I first started, we first started knocking this idea around and kind of talking about it here in the office and, you know, visiting with the chancellor off and on. I mean, it just seemed like it just continued to grow, and here we are, and we're on the very cusp of selecting our team. And, you know, as with all such external partner engagements, our ability to recruit and accurately assess the prospective partners, you know, their overall abilities and skill set, you know, and then reach a mutual shared vision regarding such strategic initiatives, you know, it's just vital, and our future success depends on it. And, our goal is to select and retain the best-in-class service providers to partner with. That's true on any of our projects, and certainly one such as this comprehensive endeavor. And, their experience and expertise and innovative approaches to address real-world health-related challenges is going to be paramount to the decision that we make. And it's just it's very encouraging. And when you walk out of some of these meetings, you know, as an old East Texas boy, my head's spinning sometimes, but it sure makes me feel good about the future, because there are some really, really intelligent folks working on current day challenges, I'll tell you that.
You've made the reference to a pre-proposal meeting. What are the next few steps in this timeline?
Yes, you know, we issued the RFP 2 or 3 weeks ago. We had our pre-proposal conference this past Tuesday. Submission deadline for proposals is June 30th. After that, we'll pull our committee together and we'll start evaluating the proposals and likely interview the finalists. That likely occur over the July-August timeframe. You know, I anticipate providing an update briefing to the Chancellor and Board of Regents, you know, probably mid to late August, early September. I would love to be able to have a formal board approval of a respective ground lease or leases, as you noted, before calendar year 2017 concludes. That would be just best case scenario. Then our P3 partner, like all of our other P3 partners, it'll be up to them, their responsibility to go out and secure the private funding to support this construction and initial operations of the facility. They'll need to get to work on that. If we were to get board approval, you know, by the, say, the January board meeting, then they'd go to work. The P3 partner would go to work in securing their financing. And, you know, best case scenario, this time next year, 2018, we could be breaking some ground. And, you know, Lord knows we need more cranes in Bryan College Station. So we've got several of them. I think some of the initiatives that are coming, the community will be pleased. I don't know they'll be pleased to have more cranes, but I do believe there's more construction cranes on the horizon.
And I'm glad you brought up the financing piece, and this would be similar then to what Park West and Century Square, how the financing came together for those.
Yeah, you know, each P3 project, and you know, I think I've shared this with you before, and I share it when I'm out speaking on occasion. You know, if you've seen one P3 project, you've seen one P3 project. So no two are the same in certain ways. They're all a little unique, but fundamentally, the ones that we do here on behalf of the Texas A&M University system, they do have that component where the P3 partner, our private partner, comes in. It's our ground. We typically do 30-year ground leases, sometimes less, a few times more, but typically, you know, 30 years or less. And then our P3 partner then goes out and provides the funding. And so the A&M system, Texas A&M University, our agencies, we do not have any legal recourse regarding the debt. And that's critical to us, particularly when we're formulating our strategic debt management policy and ensuring retention of our AAA credit rating on behalf of the board. It's very important to the Chancellor and very important to our Board of Regents. So they will be, the P3 partner will be providing the funding for this. And, you know, I think there is some misgivings out there. Oftentimes when we talk about P3, I think, unfortunately, there may be some folks in town that feel like we're just giving this ground and handing it all over to a P3 partner, and then they, you know, they secure all the upside profit. You know, we're just kind of, you know, giving the farm away, so to speak. And trust me, that is not the way it works.
Isn't that just essentially the system's function in economic development terms?
Well, it is, and you know, when you get to it, you know, all net revenue on these P3 projects comes to Texas A&M University, or whatever Texas A&M University system entity is sponsoring that particular endeavor. And I think some people misunderstand that, because I believe that some think that, you know, there's some big profit grab by our P3 partner, or there's some, you know, they're operating like a private, but then they're getting all the tax benefit of, you know, particularly in our student housing. And that's just simply not true. It's our housing. It's A&M housing. It's untaxed land. It's not on the tax rolls now. We have the operator, in some cases it's us, like A&M here at Texas A&M, our student housing operates. Sometimes we hire an external operator, the P3 partner, to operate. They're on a fixed fee. They're on a fee. And if they are not successful and not managing up to our standards, we terminate them and we get someone else. And so, you know, the profits, I mean, that's when you start hearing $600 and $700 million revenue generation to Texas A&M. Let me tell you, there's not enough left on the bone to give to these P3 partners. So, you know, we pinch them down extremely hard. We value them. They have a tremendous contribution that they make. Oftentimes it's former students that have an affinity for the university itself, and that allows them to offer some additional contribution for the betterment of Texas A&M University. And so this is tremendous. Now, what's a little bit different, now that we've kind of broached this topic, what's a little bit different about Century Square, and I'm not sure the chancellor gets the credit I feel he deserves oftentimes, but, you know, that was 60, 70 acres of land that had never been on the tax rolls, you know, been owned ever since it's been owned by the A&M system, and that was converted to Century Square. And when you add up the property tax that that's now going to generate, when you, calculate the tax revenue, the sales tax revenue, things that it's going to bring to the community, I mean, it's millions and millions of dollars potentially each year. And some of this true, the senior living, intergenerational care, it has a training aspect, it has an academic aspect to it, so that those will not be taxable, but any commercial application within one of these developments will be taxable, and the community and the county will benefit from that, in addition to the learning and training that's going on within them.
What else have I missed? Doesn't sound like a whole lot right now.
No, I kind of got on a roll here. So I appreciate you always allowing us the opportunity, to present, the new initiatives of the A&M system. And it's just a great time to be a part of the team. I do think Chancellor Sharp's vision, in combination with it means enthusiastic commitment and energy and optimism from Dr. Banks and Dr. Byington. I just think it's a win-win for the university and our students, faculty, staff. I think our community, the Brazos Valley region, and I think the state of Texas and beyond. I mean, I think the things that our researchers and professors and healthcare experts are working on is just going to be exponentially beneficial to the world. And you started off with kind of talking about the different projects, and we've got several more on the way. But I will just say, on something like this, it's just a personal privilege to be a part of such a groundbreaking endeavor on behalf of the system. I'm just richly blessed to work for someone like Chancellor Sharp, who has that type of vision. And I appreciate the opportunity he affords me pretty much on a daily basis to offer some sort of contribution, and having that opportunity to contribute to the continued advancement and success of the system and the A&M University is just a remarkable aspect, and one that's truly the highlight of my business career. It's just a great time to be wearing the maroon, I'll tell you that.
Well, certainly you have job security as long as the chancellor keeps coming up with ideas for you all to investigate.
As long as I don't miss a deadline, I'm probably in pretty good shape. But if I miss a deadline, I may have some splaining to do. But we've got a great team, proud to be a part of it, and there's much more to come. So very excited to be a part of the community and be working on behalf of Chancellor Sharp and the Texas A&M University system.
And let's finish up as I began. Just a whole lot of things going on right now in the A&M system, particularly around Bryan College Station.
Currently, we have a little over $3.4 billion worth of construction projects in design or underway. You mentioned some of the projects that we have that we've completed, we're very proud of. Kyle Field always comes to the top, but, when you talk about the first phase or two of the core dorm renovation, or the vet school, or, our renovation of the student rec center, just lots of projects that we're very proud of. TVMDL's new facility's great. But all across the system, all across the state, it's just a privilege to be a part of that. You're exactly right. Park West, the largest single-phase student housing development in the country. We did that via P3, public-private partnership. We're going to cut the ribbon on that thing July 28th. It is a truly remarkable facility. Definitely want to invite you out there to attend that. It's July 28th. We're going to have a big band and have food and try not to have too many speakers but to bore people with, but going to have a good time celebrating cutting the ribbon on Park West. Century Square, that's the development that we have that's 60-something acres over just north of what our the Bonfire Memorial, the old kind of married housing segment that we have over there, it's really coming up very well. As Chancellor has said, we believe it's going to transform the community. We've got a couple of hotels coming up. We've got some residential. We've got entertainment, restaurants, some really nice retail. We're still pursuing a grocer for that particular area, but we think it's going to be really, really nice. So a lot going on, a lot of different things happening.